Welcome to the Milk Bottle Shopify podcast, brought to you by Milk Bottle Labs, one of the world's top-rated Shopify experts. Thanks for taking the time to join us. Our founder, Keith Matthews, interviews merchants, developers, fellow agency owners, and Shopify folk to share as many Shopify tips and tricks as possible. From our base in Ireland, Milk Bottle Labs upgrade, migrate, manage, and advise some of the highest performing Shopify stores worldwide. This podcast is kindly supported by our favorite Shopify app and the only app we install in every store, Rewind.io, the leading backup solution for your Shopify store. Now over to your host, Keith Matthews.
Hey there, welcome back to the Milk Bottle Labs Shopify e-commerce podcast. My guest today is Edward Upton, and Edward Upton is the founder of Little Data, and they have a wonderful analytics app for Shopify, which supercharges the data that you can take from your store, learn more, and sell more into the future. So here goes. Edward, how are you?
I'm very well. Thanks for having me on the podcast.
Thanks for joining me. I have been following you guys for quite a while, and well done on a great product. It's solving quite a few data issues for Shopify store owners, and I'm sure that you'll go into that in more detail. Edward, at a high level, just give us a brief synopsis of exactly what Little Data does.
Sure. So Little Data, we're all about building smart connectors for e-commerce growth. And the problem we realized with a lot of Shopify stores is that as they grow, they want to do more kind of detailed data analysis. They want to understand, you know, which product lists are performing, how do people, you know, what the ratio of people adding to cart is from different types of landing pages. They want to understand the checkout conversion rate. And especially they want to be able to track all the orders and for subscription businesses, recurring orders back to the source, the marketing spend that they're doing. And that becomes harder because as you scale, you're typically multiplying the number of marketing channels and it all becomes quite noisy. So what we realized is that we had the opportunity to build a better data connector between Shopify and Google Analytics so they could get all of the right touch points, all the right event stream to be able to analyze what their customers were doing. So our first app on Shopify, which is the most popular, is our Google Analytics, the data Google Analytics app, which basically corrects the data and makes a much more accurate tracking for stores compared with Shopify's kind of out-of-the-box Google Analytics. And then the second app that we launched does a similar thing, but for the segment platform. So pumping the events and segments and from there to over 200 different marketing platforms and data warehouses that Segment supports.
Okay, that's great. So we'll go into it in more detail in a minute. But I'm also interested, Edward, in your structure and your team. You're obviously UK-based. Is your team all based in the UK?
No, so we were kind of a remote-first company before it became fashionable.
Well done.
In hindsight, I guess it's a good thing. But I guess at the beginning it was out of necessity. You know, we were very much a bootstrap company. I was a side of the business. I was working as a product consultant in London and doing this sort of data setup for bigger businesses like Made.com and Fig Leaves in Europe. And then we wanted to start developing a software product. And the designer I was working with at the time was Romanian, been working in London, but wanted to go back to, fed up with quality of life in London and wanted to go back home. And he said, look, you know, my hometown, Cluj-Napoca, happens to be a really big hub now for software outsourcing. Lots of great technical university, lots of great people. You know, why don't we hire some people out here? And so that started and we opened the office there 5 years ago. So now we have actually not all in the same city, but across Romania, we've got 13 people now. And then we've got three more of us in the UK and then increasing numbers in North America. So we've just hired our fourth person in America. So it's really, we split between those sort of three zones. It's very difficult running a business across time zones, but equally our customers are global. You know, they're everywhere. So we, to a certain extent, we have to cover a wide number of hours for customer support.
So do you find yourself, Edward, constantly on the go, or do you have the ability to switch off because your inbox must be full 24/7?
Of course. I think as a founder of a growing software business, it's a busy time. And I've got a young family as well, so doubly busy. But I think, yes, you have to stay sane. And I think I find a rhythm where, you know, I have enough hours to overlap to catch up with my colleagues further east before I begin the day and then have some calls. Most of our team calls are kind of early afternoon, which happens to be good overlap for everyone. I said, I think managing a global business is tricky. We have a surplus fee where we try to meet up in person in, you know, difficult the last year, but in normal times, every kind of 3 or 4 months, because actually that just keeps everyone, you know, gel together on the same page, working towards the same goals. We use all the obvious tools, Slack, you know, video calls, et cetera, for day to day. But I still believe there's no substitute for actually getting around the table and actually having a drink together and just, you know, bonding as a team.
Yeah, absolutely. No doubt. So I suppose as a result of COVID, then you didn't see too much of a shift on your business because you were remote anyway.
Yes.
So it probably affected you less than most people, other than the fact that you couldn't obviously travel yourself to do face to face.
I mean, the travel limitation's been tricky, but as you say, not insurmountable, given everyone was doing their thing already. In a funny kind of way, I think the knock-on effect of COVID has been a lot of bigger software companies, the Facebooks of this world, that previously had a kind of no remote policy, are now very up for hiring remotely, which unfortunately is eroding, let's say, the cost advantages of different countries. So I think that's the... In the software business, I think salaries are becoming sort of, you know, normalized around the world as people realize you can probably be 90% as effective as a software developer working remotely than you can be going to an office.
Absolutely. And I read recently an article in, I think it was Business Week, about the fact that some of the larger software companies and the VC-backed firms from out of San Francisco are actually considering analyzing, you know, salaries based on staff location as well. So, you know, which I think is probably a little bit unfair, and I hope it doesn't happen. Personally, I don't think anybody's salary should be up or down or connected to their location. But look, we'll have to just wait for it to see. It's kind of a new phenomenon, isn't it?
It is a new phenomenon. And you've got companies like Basecamp who famously pay San Francisco salaries no matter where people are in the world. But obviously that's not really sustainable for every company in the world to pay
exactly
the highest salary rate in the world. So it'll take time to settle, I think. But you know, the world's changed for good. I believe in terms of e-commerce and trends and in terms of remote working, I don't think those things will go back.
No, they won't go back. And a lot of people, I think, are new to it. But as you say, you've been doing it for years. I actually worked in telecommunications for O2 for a while. And 15 years ago, we had two BlackBerries. One was a modem and one was for your work device. Working remotely and working from home a day or two a week was standard practice. I don't think people realize too, you know, in the UK, it's been remote working has been there for years, because many people just, the journey into London or the journey into the city, as they say, was always too long. And it was only ever going to be 2 or 3 days a week for the majority of people. I always found that when I visited London. I remember on one occasion visiting a client in London, and I flew from Dublin, and he told me that I got to the office quicker than he did.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's one of those cities where commuting's been a bane for a long time and hasn't any quicker. And yeah, so I think those big cities like New York and San Fran and London, where people regularly commute 2 hours to get to work, as you say, remote working is a total bonus for everyone. As I said, even I was working from home a bit 10 years ago, but now I see friends even in people like corporate law firms that were traditionally like totally all face-to-face. Now even them, they are, you know, sitting at home working.
Agreed. But look, again, as I say, I've used your product and I've used it in Shopify stores, and I've seen how your app registers the customer and is registering little data within the order, for example, when a customer makes an order. What I'd like to do is just go into a little bit more detail, because the first thing, if we just, I suppose, go to the first product, the Google Analytics app that you guys created, straight away, I'm assuming the first thing that people say is, well, why would I need that app in my Shopify store when in actual fact, the dashboard exists, which gives me the orders, the top products, the traffic, all of that kind of data already. So why would I add it to the store, I suppose, is the first question.
As you know, Shopify's kind of developed its own analytics product the last sort of 3 or 4 years. It does give you all the basics, like, you know, which products were sold, how much you earned. But the problem is it doesn't really give you anything like enough detail on the actual customer journey if you want to do serious conversion rate optimization or sort of marketing mix analysis. So you just can't get deep enough about, you know, what was the series of events that led up to an order, and, you know, what were the different customer touch points. Yeah, you can see the last click that brought them to an order. But if you're, you know, as I said, I one of the companies I cut my teeth with was sort of made.com selling furniture. And if you buy a $1,000 couch, you don't just click on a Google ad and just click pay. It's a very considered decision. Typically,
yes,
yeah. Their business 15 or so touch points on average before someone would make a purchase. So knowing what the last click that brought the customer there is almost useless. What you need to do is look at the whole journey and the marketing mix, all the different kinds of prospecting and retargeting engagement type campaigns that got them to the eventual sale. And this is also true for kind of subscription e-commerce businesses, where again it's very unlikely to be a sort of impulse purchase. So basically, what's wrong with Shopify Analytics? Well, it's very limited in how deep you can delve. You can't do multi-channel attribution. You can't look at customer journeys. You can't export any of the raw data. So then, people turn. Shopify also has an inbuilt Google Analytics connector, but then you run into two obvious problems. One is that the data doesn't match. I mean, the revenue and orders you see in Shopify doesn't match what you see in Google Analytics. And then you're like, well, I'd probably rather have limited but accurate.
Just on that point, I've seen that a few times. So is there a simple explanation for that?
Yeah, so the simple explanation is that obviously Shopify has, if that's what you're using as your platform, that is the source of truth for how many people actually paid you, right? That's what you care about, is that money that you see in Shopify is what you actually drew down in earnings. What happens with Google Analytics traditionally, and it's not with Little Data, but before Little Data, is that all of the events are basically sent as marketing tags from your storefront. So basically behind the scenes, when someone's browsing through your store, there's little tracking scripts fire, and then they send the data to Google Analytics. In terms of an actual purchase, what happens is the user gets to a thank you page, says thank you for your order, and behind the scenes, there's a little ping. It goes to Google Analytics server saying, yeah, this order was 123, and it was for this blue T-shirt product that cost $99, and all the data you need around the price and quantity and so on. But the problem is, in quite a lot of cases, that ping never happens. Various reasons might be faulty setup of sort of a tag manager, might be the fact the user never actually waits for the thank you page to load, might be that there's other scripts on the thank you page that are blocking it, might be duplicates, the user might sort of refresh the page. I mean, we've got, if anyone's interested, just search on our blog for why don't my orders match.
When you say a lot of the times it doesn't fire or the information doesn't go back, is there a trend? Is it 20%, 30%, or is it just random?
Yeah, so I did analysis on this recently, and what we found is that obviously it depends on the store, the mix of customers. The best of we analyzed, 20 of our larger Shopify Plus customers, and it ranged from the worst case about 20% revenue match. The best tracking setup with outside Little Data was still losing 10% of their orders.
10%, yeah, okay.
And the worst one was losing 80%. The worst end is not just about thank you pages, actually comes down to the subscription order problem. So the other key thing we're solving for subscription apps such as Recharge, Bold Subscriptions, and now coming new to the Shopify people like Ordergroove, Paywell, the subscription processors. You set up a first-time order, but then you get recurring orders typically every month as your subscription gets charged. Now, what as a subscriptions commerce merchant, what you want to know is not just the first order, although that's useful, but what you want to know is what is the lifetime value of revenue coming from these campaigns. So, hey, I spent $100 acquiring this customer on Facebook ads. I wouldn't actually expect to break even the first order. So I really need to know, did order number 2, 3, 4, 5 get paid? So that's the second source of kind of untruth, is that the recurring orders just don't get tracked.
Just on that, Edward, you mentioned Recharge. Does Recharge provide a dashboard that gives the accurate information?
So they do. They've launched their own analytics product as well, but it's much more focused on, let's say, churn analysis and so on than marketing attribution. Okay. So what you still can't do, and again, what is unique to Little Data at the moment, is actually understanding which campaigns and which orders came from which marketing mix. But also, a lot of the stores we work with actually have a business mix. They do one-off and they do recurring. So obviously, the problem with Recharge dashboard is it only shows you the recurring bit. You actually want to see all of your revenue and be able to spread it out.
So Little Data is creating its own independent dashboard and pulling in the non-subscription orders and the standard orders together. Is that right?
Yeah, so we don't think of ourselves as a dashboard product. We think of ourselves as a data pipeline. So we're basically saying, look, there is already great tools for doing the analysis, for doing the reporting, Google Analytics itself, or if you like, exporting it to Google Analytics data to Data Studio, Tableau, Glue. These are all good tools for running charting and analysis. What you need though is you need the correct data points, you know, garbage in, garbage out. If you don't have all of the order data and if it doesn't match with Shopify, the analysis you do is never going to be accurate. And so what Little Data's app is doing, and I guess our secret sauce is server-side tracking. So you remember I said that the main source of inaccuracy was that the kind of the ping from the client's from the end customer's website never goes yeah. through. We remove that possibility by basically hooking directly into the order coming from Shopify. So we say, okay, look, it doesn't matter if the user never sees that. It doesn't matter because, by the way, there is a trend towards this problem getting worse, particularly as people order more on mobile and people get more used to e-commerce. More and more, they're not waiting to sort of hang around for that thank you order confirmation page. You know that thing where, let's say you check out by PayPal, you know it says, hey, your order's been processed in 10 seconds, we'll redirect you back to the store.
Yes.
I mean, how many people wait 10 seconds to be read for what? What are you going to do when you get there, right? You know the order's gone through. You know you get an email and you trust it'll come in the post a few days later. So there's no reason for the customer to wait for that thank you page to fire.
Let's take a short break and I'll share the one app we install on every Shopify build. The team at Rewind.io have developed the leading backup solution for Shopify. Did you know there is no way of recovering lost data from a Shopify store? Rewind.io automatically backs up your store data. In the event of a data loss, usually due to human error, Rewind enables you to rewind your store back to its previous state. It's so simple and is used by some of the world's leading Shopify agencies, such as Kurt Elster of EtherCycle and Kelly Vaughan at the Tap Room. If your store is gaining traction, you may have multiple users making changes. Often store owners allow team or app developers enter a store to add code. Sometimes mistakes happen and data gets deleted. You can reduce your business risk today and prevent a costly catastrophe by installing the Rewind.io app on your Shopify store. Get your first month of Rewind for free by simply responding to any of the welcome messages or emails you receive after you begin your 7-day trial and mention this podcast. Now, back to the interview. So Edward, are you saying then as e-commerce platforms and browsers become loaded with cookies and everything becomes more complex and as customer expectations rise in terms of speed and they probably, as you say, are paying less attention to alerts or even messages on the screen, that in actual fact, over the course, let's say, of the next 10 years, that store owners will be losing potentially a significant chunk of real data and it'll be completely out of their control. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I mean, that's the trend. And as I said, even if you look at right now, you know, the average store is losing about 20% of their sort of revenue data. I mean, let's say, you know, many of our customers are spending, you know, $10,000 a month on marketing. Suddenly, you don't know, you know, every month you've got $2,000 to spend. You've no idea where it's going. I mean, that's a big miss. I think you see the other trend we haven't talked about is obviously, you know, browsers and kind of cookie blocking. So with, you know, this kind of came, it's been bubbling away for a few years now, but I think with iOS 14 and changes Apple have started making, it's become more prominent. And Apple's basic belief, and I think sort of Google's a bit on the fence, but may go down that path with Chrome as well, is that basically by default, users shouldn't be tracked, right? That they, as much of these sort of analytics type tracking should be blocked as possible, which from the store owner's point of view is a disaster. Because, yeah, they don't want to collect personal information about the user necessarily, but they do want to know in aggregate how's my store performing and, you know, and where what spend's leading to sales. And so, again, I think this is driving more and more stores into the kind of into our arms because Little Data offers something quite different, which is, as I said, server-side tracking, which doesn't rely on any of these, it bypasses any of these browser limitations.
And do you think, Edward, obviously the updates to Apple seem to be one of the companies that's driving it primarily, I suppose, obviously because they're a device supplier and a lot of the world is actually on an Apple mobile device. But do you think that it could be the start of a trend over the next 5 years, other companies following suit?
Yeah, I mean, there's various other possible workarounds. I guess in the main, this sort of measurement and marketing analytics is getting harder. Yes, but I think we've spent our heritage was working with some larger non Shopify brands. Little Data spent the last sort of 4 years immersed in the Shopify ecosystem. And I think we've got to know very well what a typical larger merchant needs, and I think that's just changing all the time. We have part of what obviously we're developing new products. In fact, about to launch a connector for Google Analytics 4, which is the sort of latest version of Google Analytics. But we're investing all the time in just making sure all of this is up to date. We're handling all the latest changes from browsers, that we're handling all the latest changes from the marketing platforms. It's a fast-moving world, and I think my thesis is that any single store, or in fact any single agency, couldn't possibly keep track of all of this. It's like it would just be you'd be paying someone full time just to run your marketing tagging if you want to do it that well.
To follow it, yeah, and Facebook themselves have changed the format of that as well recently, which is causing headaches for people. Yeah. And it's interesting that you mentioned that the fact that you couldn't track the changes in the Google ecosystem. I mean, it's like that with Shopify. I mean, that's why we're in business, because I wouldn't say it's a full-time job to track the changes, but certainly you couldn't expect a busy merchant to always know what Shopify is pushing out.
Of course.
And just on that, it's amazing the amount of people that don't even know about Google's planned page experience update in May. We're mentioning it to people with significant businesses, and for some reason it seems to have passed people by, despite the fact that it was actually announced in November of last year. So just to your point there, you're dead on. It's very difficult to track updates from multiple companies across different forms of technology, which is why there's specialists in place. You've mentioned your Recharge product, and you've also mentioned your core original product for Google Analytics. Can you give us some details on the Segment product that you have?
Effectively, we are responsible for Segment's kind of official integration with Shopify. And what Segment does as a platform is it was designed to solve this problem where a lot of companies were trying to send exactly the same events to Google, Facebook, Pinterest, Twitter, TikTok, etc. And most e-commerce stores want to, for marketing retargeting, they want to send a basic set of customer journey events, people who viewed a product, added to cart, got to checkout, purchased. And so what you can do with Segment is our app sends all those events, as we discussed previously, reliably and with all the right fields and the right attribution to Segment. And in Segment, you can then choose from their vast catalog and say, yeah, I want to send, these events on. And so, yeah, it's effortless, well, not effortless, but much less effort to kind of send to many destinations. And you know that the data is going to be exactly the same. You know that once you've got the reliable source set up from Little Data, all of the same stuff is going to work across lots of different platforms.
So typically, what customer would use that particular product?
So I guess we're finding that this is, again, a problem at the larger scale. But suddenly, some of the use cases we see are people who have got lots of marketing tags and just found it very hard to manage that. And they're also concerned about page load speed. Because the other issue here is let's say you're trying to send the same data to 10 different destinations, that's pretty expensive in terms of extra scripts on your page and extra network events. Whereas if you send it once to Segment and then they relay it from their servers onto the 10, then it's much less, it's much more efficient for the end user.
You've mentioned a pain point there, because there's a lot of skepticism around Google's page speed measurement of Shopify stores, which has caused havoc in the last 12 or 18 months since they started to publish the speed. Are you seeing a marked reduction in speed as a result of that? Or are you saying that incremental changes or incremental apps like your own, which redirect data and do it in bulk rather than tiny pieces, are you saying that everything combined could possibly reduce speed?
Yeah, so what I'm saying is, what the typical journey a store comes through in marketing tagging is, they're like, okay, we'll send the data to Google Analytics. And then someone pops up and says, well, yeah, we need to do Facebook pixels as well. Okay, that's great. Well, then, oh, yeah, but we've got to do Twitter. And then we've got to do And so a typical large e-commerce brand will end up with 5 to 10 different scripts on there, right? And as you say, in isolation, none of those actually, maybe they added a couple of percentage points off your page load speed. But if someone starts adding 10 of them, then suddenly you've got a pretty big problem. And so, the, I mean, I'll answer that question in two ways. So we were talking about segments, and certainly segments one solution to that. But the other thing we've been doing just for our core Google Analytics app is just optimizing exactly how we get the kind of product data. So we're actually just about to do a big release, because you're right, you know, increasingly that whole page speed thing within Shopify admin is causing stores to panic about different apps. And it's completely, I think the big gripe with in the Shopify community has been that it's somewhat, what's the right word? It's not direct cause and effect. It's what Shopify's messaging implies is that because you added this app a week ago and your speed has gone down, that it must be that app that's responsible.
Exactly. It's not clear.
Yes. The causation rather than, you know, coincidence rather than causation.
Exactly,
is what the problem is. And so, we know people are much more tuned to that. So, we've invested a lot of effort the last few months actually kind of just going through with a fine tooth comb all of our scripts and saying, okay, where can we squeeze every last bit of efficiency out of? So, yes, we understand stores want to cut down on the page load speed. And one of the ways they can do that is certainly by optimizing the way they send data off the page.
Brilliant. Well, Edward, I have to say I've enjoyed the chat. Before we go, do you have anything exciting? You mentioned their release and you mentioned your segment product. Do you have anything exciting planned over the next year or any new product releases you can share? There's no problem if you don't.
There's two things that I would like to back up. And the first, which is coming very shortly, is support for Google Analytics 4. I mean, Shopify doesn't support this yet natively. And the reason it doesn't is because it's actually quite a big shift in terms of tracking. Shopify is effectively kind of two versions behind in Google's tracking scripts. And so it's got to do quite a lot of work to roll out the changes. Although it's a new product, it's not quite ready for the big time. It's more powerful in lots of ways. And again, I've written at length in my blog about how you can do clever stuff. And one of the biggies is that you can export all of those events to a data warehouse. So for those bigger brands wanting to actually own their own data and start capturing all of that in a big data warehouse for analysis, Google Analytics 4, I think, represents, along with Segment, a really easy way to do that. And then the second product release, which is coming later in this year, is that we're going to launch on BigCommerce. So we see with BigCommerce an opportunity. We've got a number of merchants and I reached out and said, hey, you know, we'd love to work a little later, but we're not on Shopify. So we see the opportunity to do the same thing for that platform.
That's great. And congratulations on that. That's a big effort on your part, isn't it, to shift over to an alternative platform?
Yeah, it is a big investment. But I think, you know, as I said, our typical user, the kind of stores that are doing more custom stuff, I mean, I think you're probably aware of all the changes to Shopify checkout recently with in-app subscriptions. So
yeah.
You know, previously people were using recharge checkout, and now any new merchants, increasing most of Recharge's legacy merchants, are going to be moving to do the subscription, the checkout. But unfortunately, Shopify is also through their Stripe payments is very inflexible for certain types of businesses. So we see certain we've got quite a lot of customers who are selling nutritional supplements, unregulated nutritional supplements, and Shopify just doesn't allow that. So Shopify payments doesn't allow that. So these merchants don't have a choice. If they want to continue trading, they have to move off Shopify. And I think wanting to, you know, continue to work with some of these merchants is part of the reason for the drive to a different platform.
I suppose final question, and this isn't necessarily for yourself, but now that we're talking about it, do you think there will be flexibility introduced in terms of Shopify payments? Because we've experienced it ourselves where people have just suddenly been rejected with a really, really half politely written email where people are practically high-fiving them. But at the end of it says, sorry, you can't use Shopify payments, which is bad news. Do you think that the flexibility will arise around that in the future? Or
I think Shopify's arms are tied because I think that they're tightly coupled to Stripe who do all the payments underneath. And I think it's just Stripe's policies, not Shopify's. So I don't actually think Shopify has a say in it. I think if Stripe rejects them as a merchant, then they cannot proceed. That's the reality. So to that extent, yeah, I mean, really, I guess the complaint should be to Stripe. But, Stripe's a big enough business and not to have to take on risky merchants. I don't think there will be flexibility now, sadly.
Look, although I asked the question, it's not a simple issue. You know, the assessment of risk for the merchant service industry is a very complex and very detailed one. So while it's an automated email to the merchant and it looks like bad news, and there has been a lot of algorithms run and risk analysis made before that email is ever sent. So
sure. But as you say, it's a bit of a killer because you then have to, you know, that email means you're obligated to spend many tens of thousands sort of rebuilding your store.
Absolutely. And it's one of the things that merchants find out about late in the game. They have to make the application to understand whether they're going to be rejected or not, which is at the end of a build usually, or, you know, past halfway. So, but Edward, look, you've turned data into a very interesting conversation. So thank you very much.
No worries. It's been a pleasure.
We will follow your progress in the future. And I'll put in, you mentioned your blog a couple of times there, and we'll make sure to put that into your show notes.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you very much. Talk to you soon.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. All of our episodes are available on Spotify, iTunes, and Google Podcasts. A special note of appreciation goes to our sponsor, Rewind.io, the leading backup solution for Shopify store owners. Get your first month of Rewind for free by simply responding to any welcome email once you sign up for your free trial on Rewind.io. If you're a Shopify user with an exciting story to tell, reach out to the team on hello@milkbottlelabs.com.